Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the SOM TV podcast. My name is Jason Wise, the host and also the director of the films and a lot of the stuff you see on SOM TV. I want to apologize. I know that it's been a bit since we've been up, but we are back on schedule, and after the first of the year, episodes will continue. The reason I'm here now is we wanted to kind of do an emergency podcast to talk about these tariffs. I have a podcast coming up not too long from now with Brian McClintic, where we talk about natural wine and some crazy topics around that topic. But in the middle of that, I wanted to get his thoughts on these tariffs, and I thought I would take that and put it up. But before we get to that, I should update you on where we are. SOM TV obviously has a bunch of new stuff. We are over here working very hard trying to get new stuff up all the time. In the next 2 weeks, will be the announcement of the premiere of a film I directed called The Delicacy. It is a film about sea urchin divers that has taken about 5 years to film, all shot on actual film, not video, underwater in some very dangerous places. And though it's a food film, I don't think it's like any food film you've ever seen. I am beyond excited to bring that up. Podcast's coming up soon after that. We're going to start talking about the next SOM movie. And I cannot believe I am telling you this, but there is another film coming. And it is by far the most ambitious and I think, you know, something I have been very excited to bring. And we've been working on the possibility of whether it could be done for quite a long time. So that is happening. And the film itself will begin to screen at the end of this summer in 2020. And we will have quite a bit of news on that for you. So without further ado, let's do a quick update on what's going on with these tariffs and how they affect wine with Brian McClintic, who has been in most of our films and is a very, very dear friend of mine. How do you give layman terms about what is going on right now? What are these tariffs? And then we'll get to why it matters to wine.
Yeah, it's
because you, let's just set this up really fast though. You are a person who, you import wine? I mean, what would you classify yourself as, an importer?
No, I'm a retailer.
Okay,
you're an import license and technically could, but thus far with my business, I've supported importers and really tried to work collaboratively with the system because importers are most often the unsung heroes of our industry. You know,
right.
You get sommeliers get a lot of credit for things, blowing up wines, and importers are the people, they're the Indiana Jones. They're bringing these wines to the, but most of them have a low profile, you know, and fly under the radar. I mean, possible exceptions would be like Kermit Lynch or someone like that, who was also a retailer and, you know, wrote a book that, you know, caught fire back in a long time ago. So, you know, outside of that, most of these importers, they're doing silent but amazing work.
So these tariffs will greatly affect you. You deal with your EU countries all the time and you're...
Right. So basically, if you look at the background of it without getting... You know, I'm not a geopolitical wizard, but there's two major companies involved. One's Boeing, which we know is a U.S. Aircraft manufacturer. Now, the EU version of Boeing is Airbus. And so if you're on a United flight, you might have flown on an Airbus 320 or something. So that's Airbus. They're an EU company. And what's happened is basically Airbus has been given favorable contracts by the EU and they're able to outbid Boeing. And so this has been demonstrated by the WTO as kind of an unfair practice. And so in retaliation, Trump decided to put a tariff on EU goods coming to the United States. And so what that looks like right now is a 25% tariff on certain wine, non-sparkling.
So all items coming from the EU.
Mostly France and Spain right now. Wine that's under 14% alcohol in a magnum or a double magnum format, and it's non-sparkling wine. So sparkling wine, as of now, if it hits the water, is exempt. So
is this 25%? This is how it exists at the moment.
Right.
And is that on, so if a bottle costs $15, 25% of $15?
Exactly. So like a 25% increase from there. So if we look at a $20 bottle would cost 25, right?
Okay.
Yeah, so.
And it's going to go up to what?
Well, he's threatening not only 100% tariff, but he's threatening all EU wines. So now Austria, Italy, the 28 countries. So this is most of continental Europe, you know, outside of the Balkans, et cetera. Wow. And there's no ways around it. Like, now all alcohol levels, all styles. sparkling white, red, everything from those countries, plus olive oil, plus cheese. The threat is of January, I think it's January 13th, they vote on this, to go up to 100 because the Airbus situation hasn't resolved itself. That's still in place. So this is kind of a protectionist tariff, which you're kind of playing chicken
right
with the EU, hoping they'll back down. But if this goes
in, and it's to protect Boeing. I mean, essentially, all this comes down to protect an American,
right?
Aeronautic company.
And so what it would do is cripple the wine industry. There are several places that can't survive. Several businesses and entities that will not be able to weather that, if that's the case. And
what are examples? You work with very small producers.
A small importer, or even a mid-size importer whose entire relationships have revolved around the EU. I mean, it's going to be very, very difficult to weather an increase like that.
It's tough. I mean, think about the wine and our knowledge of wine, what comes from the EU. You're talking all the wines from France. And it would include Champagne if this passes.
Right.
So, I mean, you're talking Champagne, you're talking Bordeaux, you're talking Burgundy, you're talking...
So think about it from my
Provence,
perspective,
all this rosé. I mean, all this rosé that's so hot, and it's like $15-$20 a bottle. That stuff, for the normal person,
right,
that's a considerable raise. I mean, it dips into your gas money and things that are real.
It's absolutely real. And it not only hits importers the hardest, but there's collateral damage in restaurants that are built on French wine lists at a certain price point, let's say. And me as a retailer, so I have a unique business where I do custom bottlings in advance. So I have about three different shipments for Vitical. Now I do 12 a year, so this is a quarter of my shipments. I have a quarter of my shipments that are probably not going to make that deadline, but are going to be on the water because there's no choice. I've already bought and paid for the wine in advance. It's been custom labeled. And I honestly don't know if this goes up to 100, it's going to be very, very difficult for me to weather the year as well. I have to figure something out.
Have to then shift to only releasing North American, Canadian, Mexican wines? I mean...
Well, they vote every 6 months, so certainly there would be a giant upfront hit to the business, and I would have to consider, in order to survive, if I can, I would have to go outside of... and so the collateral of this is South America, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, Balkan areas like Georgia, Canadian wine, and our local wine, I think, stand a chance to obviously blow up in the wake of this. But the problem is, if the EU just might sell these goods to other world markets, they might not back down. They'll just be like, well, screw the U.S. So this is the fear. They will sell to other world markets and be able
But there's a secondary game of chicken that's happening right now that's also with the U.K.
Right.
The U.K. is an interesting situation because they are negotiating their exit from the European Union right now. And they seem to be, sorry to get my politics involved, but they are just getting dumber and dumber by the minute. And the way they have to negotiate, America having a problem with the European Union's trade is the best thing that could happen to the UK's situation right now, because they can, if you think of Europe, you think it's so big and there's so many countries and they have so much commerce, but they really, really need the UK and they really, really need the United States. I mean, this whole goods flowing back and forth and why they created the European Union to do that, it's going to really, really hit France and Germany really hard because, it's not just wine, it's not just food and cheese and things. We're talking about hard goods. You're talking about shipping fuel back and forth. You're talking about metal. I mean, things that are just the basic stuff that like revolutions start over. It's like people don't riot in the streets because wine goes away. They riot because their gas goes up $10 a gallon. Right. And I think everybody in the wine business is very, very, very up in arms. There's, I see like Dustin Wilson and Bobby Stuckey and everybody tweeting nonstop to sign petitions. And I hope this game of chicken is just that, and that there's a back down. Do you think that that's going to happen? I mean, what's the likelihood this actually happens?
I honestly cannot answer that question. I feel like Trump has shown a psychology of someone who is all offense and does not like to back down. So I wouldn't be surprised if the tariff went up to 100. But I have no way of knowing. I'm not the guy to ask. I just know personally, you know, you have to be at terms with it. I was never entitled to have a successful business, and this is the stuff that happens. There's economic downturns, there's policy changes, and it's great to be your own boss, but that comes with a price. And so you have to be able to respond, realize that you're not entitled to be successful, and pivot and change. And I tend to feel holistically that things do happen for a reason, even if that means completely altering an entire business. You know, I'm open to that and ready for that if need be. And I don't think there are importers that have to think that way. They don't have a chance otherwise. They're in a lot worse position to me. And, you know, I don't say that as someone distant. You know, I'm incredibly empathetic to how this will affect especially small importers that have built an entire business off of selling EU goods. So with that, you know, it's a waiting game, and I wish I had a better answer as to what's going to happen. What I know is, you know, basically expect the worst and hope for the best.
Well, let's look at the inverse, though. If you're a winemaker in, let's say, Turkey, or you're a winemaker in Mexico, which there are some, I've had some, I'm not joking here, some truly great wines down in Mexico.
100%.
And you're a winemaker in the Willamette Valley, where you kind of frequent quite a bit, or Santa Barbara, or New York State, this could be really good, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this could be a situation where all of a sudden, land's more expensive here, or at least to buy it, and so wines are, you know, if you make a rosé in Napa or Sonoma, you actually, from a price point, all of a sudden can compete with these cheap French rosés that are flooding in. I mean, is there any bright side of this at all?
Yeah, I think there's an ebb and flow in these moments with opportunism, and you know, for either good or for bad. But certainly, if I try to look at the silver lining of what a world would look like with a long-term tariff of this magnitude, it would definitely be a true exploration of our local resources, which I think needs to happen more palpably anyways. There's a lot of wine club members that I've said that are like, why can't you just give me all European wines? And I'm like, it's a very important aspect of my business to support local growers, because I firmly believe, not only from a carbon footprint standpoint, but I really feel that we can compete at that level and do some really, really amazing things with farming and winemaking here. So yeah, I see a lot more opportunities for new and emerging regions that are closer in the Americas. I think Argentina and Chile will get the spotlight they deserve because those are wildly underpriced. Mexico offers great stuff. There's incredible wines being made up in Canada. And even further reaches for people who, you know, crave the unique and interesting. The community that is coming out of wine growing in Japan right now is absolutely amazing. And so,
yeah, it's really, I mean, I guess an unfortunate and also a thing that you have to look at. But the positive is that this does happen. I believe, I guess maybe as a person who tries to stay positive, that it won't last if it does pass.
Yeah. I mean, we're hopeful, right? And again, there's, if the worst case scenario happens in January, there'd be a revote 6 months later.
Right.
You know?
And so then hopefully, you know, in that 6 months, people go, I had never heard of a Japanese X, you know.
Yeah.
I had a Riesling from Japan that was actually pretty good recently. But you know, you wouldn't think about that stuff. And that's not, you don't want growers and people to suffer for you to discover a Japanese wine. That's not what I mean. I just mean, it means that if you're a wine drinker, or even in some cases, you know, a cheese eater, there might be stuff close by you that you're not thinking about that's really good. And maybe that's the bright side, and then hopefully the 6 months later this goes away. Because I don't think people are drinking less wine.
Yeah. If the bright side is a renewed focus on local and maybe a more robust infrastructure around local products, then that's a very, very good thing.
How can people, should they go and, you know, call their congressman about this? I mean, if you're a wine drinker, what should you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's Pelosi for California. And so definitely anyone in the industry should and, you know, go to the USTR website and form a petition, you know, if you feel strongly that, that this is not the way forward, you know, and certainly if it's in the interest of protecting the wine industry and the businesses from suffering a pretty sizable collapse, then all voices are helpful.
I want to say I personally am a very free market believer. I believe that competition breeds success, and it can be extremely painful from time to time.
Right.
And I think, you know, we've seen this with cars. We've seen it with, I mean, certainly I've seen it with movies. If you don't have the ability for others to have access and make films that are really good, then you end up with derivative films over and over again. And it's a painful process to, you know, do all this stuff. But it is, competition breeds innovation. And it's an unfortunate reality, but I think people want to win. You know, and they want to come up with new stuff. And when they're stuck in a factory making the same crap all the time.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many
tariffs
phrases.
Are not the way.
Yeah. No. But, you know, we will figure out a way around it, but the landscape of wine will look completely different, and it'll be at the detriment of a lot of really hardworking people.
I love it. All right. So if you're not a subscriber, go to SomTV.com. Go to Viticol. Tell me what the website is so that people can sign up for your wine club, which is fantastic wine club, guys.
It's viticolwine.com, so V-I-T-I-C-O-L-E wine.com. There is a waiting list, but it's short. I do that to... I let people in blocks because we do long-range custom collaborations. So sign up for the waiting list. It's a short wait, and then we'll move you in as space allows.
Love it.
Yeah.
Thanks, brother. It's good to talk to you. I miss you.
Miss you too, you sexy beast.
Don't forget to subscribe to the SomTV podcast. Sign up for SomTV. Sign up for Brian's wine club, Viticol, which is a pretty special project. I'm really honored to have you guys listen to this, so thank you very much, okay? I will see you next week. We are talking to Steve Mathiasen, who's a winemaker up in the Napa Valley who's been in most of our films. If you remember from our second movie, he was the gentleman whose family went through the earthquake and the barrels all over the place. We're going to talk about the earthquake, but more importantly, we're going to talk about the time he was almost killed by an owl. And I heard this story about 4 or 5 years ago, and I have not been able to get it out of my head, so I went up to Napa just to talk to him about this. It's amazing. Death from above. So that's next week on the SomTV podcast. Talk to you then. Bye.